The committee this year decided to have the first annual Peter Rosen Lecture. And I have to say that, you know, we thought of calling it the Peter Rosen Memorial Lecture, but then we remembered that he actually is still in San Diego, even though in Denver he's been gone from us for some years. So Peter has been kind enough to agree to give the first annual Peter Rosen Lecture for this conference. I think actually that Dr. Peter Rosen needs very little introduction to this group. As all of you know, he was one of the founders of our specialty, one of the founders of the American College of Emergency Physicians and the American Board of Emergency Medicine, one of their earliest members. Beginning in Chicago in emergency medicine, he started the residency program at Denver General Hospital in Denver, which trained so many of us and for which we owe him forever our careers and our thanks. He's now, for those very fortunate people in San Diego, a clinical faculty there and continues his work on his classic textbook, as well as continuing to teach students in emergency medicine. We owe him an enormous debt to our entire specialty, as well as myself and many people in this room personally. And at this time, I'd like to welcome Dr. Peter Rosen, who's going to speak to us on the future of emergency medicine, one man's perspective.
Thanks, Lily. To paraphrase Mark Twain, the stories of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. I decided that I wouldn't give the talk that's in your handout. You've got that to read anyway. And the reason I decided that was in a number of conversations that I had here this week, I realized that perhaps it was time to take a public forum to articulate what has been a 25-year dream, and that is to try to tell you what I think emergency medicine is, should be, needs to be, and can be, and what I think are some of the problems that face it that may prevent that dream from becoming a reality. But as I look back over that 25-year trail, I'm very impressed with the reality that we have, in fact, had a major impact on the way medicine is practiced, not only in this country, but in a number of European and other countries in the world, and that we serve as the standard bearers for the kind of practice that needs to exist. What is emergency medicine? Emergency medicine is that acute problem that occurs whenever. It need not be a life-threatening problem. It need not be a medical problem at all. The emergency department is the repository of many of the sociologic failures of our society. But it's the one place in our society that, in fact, is truly democratic. We, perhaps not by virtue of our own worthiness, perhaps in response to our fear of legal recrimination, perhaps who knows why? But the reality is that emergency medicine is the one place you can turn to in our society to get help, whatever degree of help you may need. You may not get precisely what you want. I turn away a lot of people that would have been happier with a boxcar full of Vicodin tablets, but nevertheless, you are going to get some help, and you're going to get the help that you're entitled to, independent of who you voted for president, independent of who you believe is the ultimate deity, independent of the quality of your wallet. And I think that that's one of the remarkable aspects of the field that needs to be protected. Whatever form of compensation we invent, there will never be enough money to support patients' care in the emergency department. That's true now, that'll be true in the future. Whether it's managed care, whether it's the Clinton plan, whatever it is, you can guarantee one thing, there'll be more that you're asked to do for less compensation, and somehow you'll get it done. The next few things that I'm going to say, I want to remind you that I'm not trying to insult anybody. I believe that the people who are in the field are good people who are well-intentioned and who do their best to deliver high-quality care to the patients that they're responsible for. But one of my dreams, and I hope to live long enough to see it come true, is that someday you will not be able to walk into an emergency department in this country and find a physician there who is not trained in emergency medicine. What is so important about training? Isn't it true that you can read the literature, read the textbooks, critically appraise your care, and become an emergency physician? Yeah, it is true. After all, I did it myself. I didn't train as an emergency resident. But I can also tell you that there is a major difference in learning the right way in the first place. And what is that difference? Emergency medicine is an interface specialty. You spend an inordinate amount of time convincing other people to do what they don't want to do but need to do. 3 o'clock in the morning, there isn't an internist alive who doesn't look on an admission as anything but punishment, and has lots of good reasons why that shouldn't occur. I think that the best emergency physician is the one who can walk tall, who doesn't defer to anybody. You do not need a cardiologist to tell you how to define ischemic chest pain. You know more about seizures and their management than the neurologist. You can manage pediatric emergencies better than the pediatrician. And I think it's time we started taking credit for what we do and stopped deferring to other specialties. We've been polite for too fucking long. And the reality is that when you defer, you get bad outcomes. And when you get bad outcomes, the patients who are your principal responsibility suffer. How are you going to alter that? You have to know what you know. And you don't get there without appropriate training. There is some data to support what I'm saying. I told you earlier in the week that the number of lawsuits that I've personally experienced over the last 20 years in regards to medical malpractice in the emergency department have had very few trained emergency physicians. It's not that they're smarter, that they know more medicine. I think it's that they have more self-confidence. They refuse to accept the advice that's bad advice that will lead to bad patient outcome. In conversations with physicians around the country, I'm amazed at the number of physicians who will not perform a lumbar puncture. If a child needs an LP, they've got to get a pediatrician to come in and do it. It's unthinkable, but that's their practice. Guess what? That leads to bad outcomes. And I think that the future of our specialty is that we recognize it as a specialty. There are still a lot of people in this country who don't believe that emergency medicine is something unique. It is something that you can describe, it is something that you can study, it is something that you can learn, and it is something that you can improve upon. One of the sources of enormous gratification to me is the degree of wisdom that the people that I've worked with now possess, that's coming back to educate me. I spent a long day this week being introduced to ultrasound by two of my ex-residents. It was thrilling. It tells me that emergency medicine is a true science, because a true science evolves. Maybe there is somebody who has an original idea, as Einstein did, but he was shortly surpassed by Heisenberg and the people who took nuclear physics to a level that he couldn't comprehend or accept. Same thing's going to happen with emergency medicine if it's a true science. What's an example of an untrue science? Well, I think psychoanalysis. The only really good practitioner of psychoanalysis was Freud. And everybody still worships him as a deity, but nobody has surpassed him. I think that emergency medicine has to evolve if it's going to be a true specialty, and it already has. We need to continue to grow, to develop, but we need to understand we are a unique specialty. Why haven't we been designated primary care? Well, that's political, and it's also artificial. What the hell is primary care? Define it. Nobody can. Is it your first contact with the patient? Then clearly we're primary care. Who does that better than we, or more frequently? Is there something unique about seeing people over time? I don't know about your practice, but at least a third of the patients in my department get their only medical care in my emergency department. Is that primary care? Who cares? I know what emergency medicine is because I know what it was like when it wasn't there. And I know what it needs to be in the future. And that is the source that you go to and how you get there and what it's like when you finish there. That's emergency medicine. It is not doing pap smears. It may be giving immunizations. Who knows? But it is a unique, identifiable body of knowledge that can be described, that can be learned, that can be taught, and that can be improved upon. And I'm actually rather happy that we're not designated as primary care. And the reason I'm happy is because the biggest threat to our future are the health planners who believe that anybody can practice emergency medicine. All you have to do is put them in the emergency department and pay them less than a trained emergency physician, and we will have a wonderful medical practice. Well, I say to you that that's nonsense. And in fact, the data that shrieks out for analysis is what's happened in all of those managed care programs in terms of whom they hire now. They don't want anyone who isn't trained in emergency medicine. Why not? Is it because they want to pay out more money in salaries? I doubt it. It's because they have found that economically it makes the most sense. They have the physician who can see the most patients, who can deal with the true emergencies as well as the non-emergencies, who is least likely to produce malpractice, and who is the most comfortable with the recognition of the unknown. Because let's face it, our specialty, even though it takes care of a vast horde of patients who are non-emergencies, is there for those patients who are in fact life or limb threatened. If we aren't competent to recognize and at times invent the care for those conditions, then we have no need to be there, and it is okay to hire any licensed physician. But that's where it makes a difference. And I have to tell you that if you're honest with yourself, you recognize the fact that 95% of the patients you see are doctor-proof, and there's nothing you can do to them that will harm them, there's probably not a lot you can do to them to help them. It's that other 5% that need you, and they need you in a timely fashion. And there isn't anybody working in an emergency department who can't remember a case where he made a difference, or sadly, a case where he should have made a difference but wasn't able to because of failure of knowledge, failure of performance, because we're going to have those too. 2 years ago, my family and I took a ski vacation in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And one night after dinner, I suddenly had a severe asthma attack and had to go into the hospital. And on the way into the hospital, in addition to having trouble breathing, I was scared because I used to practice surgery in Wyoming, and I knew the quality of the doctors in the emergency departments in Jackson. And I was really anxious about who was going to treat my asthma attack besides me. And I got to St. John's Hospital, and one of the more thrilling experiences I ever had in my life is that the physician on duty had trained in the Medical College of Wisconsin residency program. I didn't know him, but I knew his director, and I could literally breathe a sigh of relief and just be a patient. Now, he's not, unfortunately, representative of what happens in rural emergency departments, but it's my dream that he will be. And I can say that in the 25 years that I've been involved in emergency medicine, we have seen an enormous difference in the care of patients. We have seen an enormous difference in what happens to people and how they live and prosper in this country. My father died of pulmonary edema. He was cared for by an intern who probably had never seen a case of pulmonary edema in his life. He didn't have a real serious kind of pulmonary edema. He wasn't in pump failure from a big MI. He was in high resistance pulmonary edema, the kind that you guys see and treat probably at least once a week and don't think about it as a particularly difficult problem. I think that it's quite likely that were my father alive today and developed that same case of pulmonary edema, he would have survived it. That's emergency medicine. And I think that if you look carefully at your practice, you will see examples of what difference we've made, of what now is not even requiring of thought that we do instinctively. Where is that going to take us? I don't know. Maybe it will take us to doing rapid sequence intubations on a paramedic level in the field. Maybe it will take us to the delivery of reperfusion enzymes in the field and on the helicopter as well as in the emergency department. Maybe that will be a dead end, and in 10 years we won't use enzymes at all. We'll do something else. There are things, of course, that we can't accomplish in the field, but that's okay, because our job is not to do all of medicine in the emergency department. It's to take care of that acute problem and to stabilize it for definitive care. We have seen the growth of an elite in emergency medicine. Now, I know it's not politically correct to talk about elites, and I agree, it should not be an elite that comes from who your parents were, or what your religion is, or what the color of your skin is. It's an elite that comes from education and knowledge and training. I have to tell you that it is frightening to see the quality of the applicants to emergency medicine. These are the leading graduates of their medical school classes. These are the students who historically went into internal medicine. They no longer are. They're coming into emergency medicine. When I first got to San Diego, we had maybe one student every other year who opted for emergency medicine. This year we have 15. And the bulk of them are the leaders in their class. This is going on all over the country. Even though there are now 104 residency programs, there are still twice, if not three times, as many applicants as there are places. Guess what, gang? That means that you no longer have to select from the bottom of the class. Does it make a difference? Well, of course it makes a difference over time. When we have that kind of talent and creativity, we're going to see a difference in our specialty, and it's going to filter down to every emergency department in the world. That's exciting. It's exciting to be part of that process. It's exciting to think about what the future is going to hold. Do we have problems? Yes. We have to hold off the health planners that think we can close emergency departments because they can create primary physicians to take care of sore throats and non-emergencies. Even if they can do that, are they going to be available 24 hours a day? And if they are available 24 hours a day, is that truly going to be cheaper than having an emergency department that has physicians that can take care of true emergencies as well? I don't think so. And I don't think it's going to happen. The second thing is the health planners, as I've alluded to, want to get rid of the trained emergency physician. Sure, we can go back to the good old days when incompetence ruled the emergency department. But I'll have to tell you why we're not going to. Our principal ally at the present time and for the next decade is the plaintiff bar. It is those people that make our lives miserable that in fact are ensuring a quality of care that will not permit anything but a trained emergency physician and a dedicated competency in emergency medicine. A sad irony, but a reality. How do we deal with the fact that it isn't such a great lifestyle? Everybody says, oh, emergency medicine, that's great. You only have to work a few shifts a month and you can play the rest of the time. But in point of fact, we work more nights and weekends and holidays than any other specialty. And in point of fact, as you age, they become harder to work. I can tell you from personal, savage experience that working a night shift becomes a difficulty as you develop a lot of the aging problems. And I think that we have to have some capacity for taking care of ourselves as we age. We haven't solved the problem of how to make a profession compatible with a family, not for male, never mind for female. And I think that's one of the challenges for our future, is how do we protect people when they have illness? How do we protect them when they have family needs? How do we, in fact, ensure that our graduates can continue to practice high-quality emergency medicine. Burnout is probably a phenomenon of fear. Most of the people who leave the field do so, don't feel comfortable in the emergency department. And while I think the best physicians that I know are always a little scared that they're going to miss something, they're always a little frightened that they haven't done enough, the people that are really scared are the ones who don't know what they know to start with, the ones who are always deferring to the other specialties, the ones who are scared that the decisions they make are the wrong decisions, and even more importantly, are scared to perform the difficult tasks of emergency medicine. The hardest part of performing a cricothyrotomy is picking up the knife. Once you've done that, it becomes a demanding technical procedure, but a much easier one than bringing yourself to knife the patient in the first place. That kind of confidence doesn't come from time, it comes from training. As you well know, I've spent a lot of my life training residents, trying to give them that confidence, trying to give them that vision of themselves as something unique in medicine. Maybe that's my contribution to the field. I also have to say that as I look back on my 25 years as an emergency physician, I am very fulfilled by the opportunities that I've had. It's been a good life. I could have done other things in my life, and maybe they would have been better things, but I don't think I have to regret the things that I have done. And as I look at the field in the future, whatever the health planners do to us, whatever the variety and computations of economics of medicine, there's still an enormous, important responsibility for people to deliver, and that's called emergency medicine. To those of you who are just starting in the field, congratulations. You've got 30 to 40 years of pure satisfaction ahead of you at the knowledge that what you're doing makes a difference and is worth doing. It won't be easy. It won't all be pleasurable. There are lots of frustrations in emergency medicine that probably will get worse rather than better. But when you're my age and you're looking back on your life and you're saying, was it worth it? The answer will be, yes, it was. Emergency medicine is something that our society needs and benefits from, and something that you are responsible for the betterment of your immediate environment by participating upon. Maybe I'm all wrong in what my vision of the field should be. Maybe I'm all wrong in the way I've tried to teach it. But I have to tell you that what isn't going to change is the demand for that kind of quality. And it's up to you to deliver it. But if you do, I think you can walk tall and feel enormous pride in what you've been. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes this year's conference, and we look forward to seeing everybody next year, February 2nd to 8th in Breckenridge. Thank you all again.